My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I will watch the end of the game, as will my next guest. I'm sure he's sitting in front of a TV somewhere. MrHoopsCritic.com himself, SiriusXM NBA Radio. See him on NBA TV every once in a while. Brian Geltzeiler, hot support here on CBS Sports Radio. Where are you sitting watching the end of this Bucks-Bulls game?
Sitting on my couch. Where else am I sitting, right, Jody?
Good for you. All right, let's start here. Bucks jump out to a 9-0 lead. I thought they were going to cruise and just be able to take this game or basically off. But Bulls kind of did a good job of grinding their way back into this one. Good effort out of the Bulls. You're giving them credit. Milwaukee not capable of stepping on their throat and putting them down. What happened in this one? I was on the air. You know better than me.
I'm going to blame Milwaukee more than I'm going to credit Chicago. And don't get me wrong. Chicago is a poor defensive team that played well defensively today. So you have to give them credit for that. But Middleton has had a miserable shooting game. And that's something that for the Bucks, as good as the Bucks are, that's difficult to recover from. And again, he's shooting free throws right now and putting them down. The Bucks are about to put this away. But they're going to need more out of Chris Middleton than what he gave them today from the field, 4-13, 1-7 from three. And that's the thing with the Bucks. Sometimes they aren't as disciplined as they should be. And the reality is, in a game like this for them, 38 threes is too much. You have the best inside player on the floor, and you got to get him the ball a whole lot more often. And they, Giannis, you know, he had 27 points, he had 19 shots, but you look at their shot distribution, and you need to explain to me how he only had three more shots than Holiday, only five more shots than Lopez, and only six more shots than Middleton. Like, it's so for the Bucks, their own worst enemy is themselves in a spot like this. Listen, the Bulls are here. They're going to fight. Caruso played fantastic in terms of what he did defensively. He was wonderful today. They had a 6-25 game from DeRozan, and here we are with the Bucks needing free throws down the stretch to be able to put this thing away. And I think you look at all of this on a whole, and Milwaukee, and I don't think Milwaukee played bad defensively. They need offensively to remember where their bread is buttered. They got away from that too much for too long today. I mean, the Bulls stayed in this game, Jody. They shot 33% from the field and 7-36 from three. That's wow. How poorly they played offensively. Milwaukee guarded them well. Milwaukee's got some soul searching to do on offense because they're significantly better than this basketball team that they just let hang around in the game they shouldn't have.
That's some pretty bad three-point shooting on both teams' efforts. 10-38 for Milwaukee and 7-36 for Chicago. Yeah, that's why neither team is getting to 100, and the Bucks are just in the lower 90s at 93. You're right on the way this one played out. Thanks for filling in the blanks, because I couldn't pay strict attention to it. I did the first five games, yesterday's four and the early game today, and we did not have a game come down to the final seconds until the Boston Brooklyn game today, which was stone cold phenomenal. How big was it for Boston to get the win in that game? Toss up series on the betting line, on what they did against each other during the year. If Boston had lost today and they were within 0.4 seconds of doing just that, would that have basically compromised their chances to the part of where you didn't think they could get a win in the series?
Oh, yes. Today was enormous for them. You got to look at it in these terms, Jody. Boston is, you know, as good as they defend. With Brooklyn, sometimes you got to score with them for periods of time in a game. And it's not enough just for it to be Tatum and Brown. If Boston doesn't win that game today, they burn a 20-point performance from Horford, who, by the way, had 15 rebounds also, and a 20-point performance from Smart. The two of them combined averaged 22 points a game in the regular season. They scored 40 today. You can't waste that. You're not going to. You don't have enough consistent scoring around Tatum and Brown to waste that. And with Williams out, with Robert Williams not playing, their defense is very, very good still. Don't get me wrong, but it's not all-worldly. It's not elite like it is when you have Robert Williams on the floor. So you look at this one, they needed this one very, very badly, especially, here's the other part of it. Durant didn't play well. This was not Kevin Durant's best effort today at all. He had 23 points on 24 shots. He struggled a lot of the game. He was not an enormous factor in this game. Kyrie Irving's who carried Brooklyn on his back. If you're going to let Brooklyn win on a day when Durant, okay, scores less points than the amount of shots he takes, you're in trouble the rest of the series. So there's That's so it. Many different levels for this with Boston, with why they needed this game badly. With that said, I picked them in 7 at the beginning of the series. I stay with that, but I would not be shocked if Brooklyn wins this series. Brooklyn, a lot of things went wrong for the Brooklyn Nets today, and there they were. They needed Durant and Kyrie to fall asleep on the weak side and let Tatum go backdoor for a layup at the buzzer to end that game. If they don't, they make the one play, they overcome all those things and still win. The margin for error for both these teams is thin, but for a number two seed for Boston, it's especially thin.
It is. Was a tremendous game, and I think it will be a tremendous series. As we said, Boston had to have it. They needed it. They were favored. They were supposed to win. They got it with 0.4 seconds to go. But the Nets had the great rally. They fall behind. They come out. They light it up to start the fourth quarter. They've got the lead. How bad a loss is it for the Nets?
It's not. Listen, there's no such thing in the playoffs as a good loss. Even what the Bulls just did for the valiant effort that they put on and they defended better than they normally do, there's no such thing as a good loss. So for Brooklyn, it's damaging. But also keep one thing in mind about Brooklyn. You just got to get one here to get back home. Yes, this was an opportunity, but you have another opportunity Wednesday night, and you know you have the two of the three best players on the floor, and certainly two guys that are historic scorers, and one of them just didn't play well. Now, I will say this. Durant not playing well isn't so simple as Durant had a bad game. They defended him very well, and they were really rough with him off the ball. And one thing I'll say, Jody, is I am quite surprised that whether it's Kevin Durant or Steve Nash, somebody didn't complain publicly to the media about the officiating at the end of the game. And I would expect that. I would hope that happens sometime between now and game two, because they, in the fourth quarter, they were really physical with Durant. They were mauling Durant off the ball. And I know Durant pushes off sometimes, and he does what he has to do to get open. But they were overly physical with them, and the referees let it go. And if I'm Steve Nash, I want to shine a light on that. Because I have a superstar all-world player who may be the best player in the world right now. And I need him to be able to get open off the ball so every single shot opportunity for him doesn't have to start with the ball in his hands. And when they're going to play him as physical as they did, that becomes a heck of a lot harder. And I give Boston credit. Keep doing it as long as you get away with it. It's a terrific strategy for them. And they're jumping screens out high with them. The other thing is, I will tell you this with Steve Nash, you have to start to set multiple screens off the ball for Durant and run some different actions with him with two and three screeners, staggered screens, have them fake and go backdoor for a lob. You need to start to mix it up a little bit. There's a lack of imagination with Brooklyn's offense off the ball. The most complicated things you're seeing are Irving and Durant pick and rolls. And I think as good as your talent is, at certain points in time, that talent needs some support and some help from the sideline. And I just don't know that they got it today.
How close was this series before they ever started it? Like I said, toss up in Vegas. The line was the Nets, the slightest of favorites, basically a toss up. The game ends 115-114 with a basket with 0.4 seconds to go. And even more, this is the stat that jumped out at me. And you talked about the physicality that the referees allowed in today's game, and they did. And Boston will play as physical as any team in the NBA. Both teams shot 24 foul shots, and both teams made 19. They both shot 19 of 24 from the line. That's how evenly matched these two teams are. Wednesday night should be a great one as well. We didn't have a great one early today. The Heat just put it on the Hawks. Heat taking advantage of the week off and being able to rest, get some practice time in, or the Hawks just drained from having to fight their way into the postseason by winning two play-in games?
Yeah, combination of both. Jody, you and I have been doing this long enough that we understand that through the course of the playoffs, you get outliers. And those outliers can fall at any point in time. I think we had a game one outlier in that series today. You know, you look at it this way. How many games is Trae Young going to go 1-12 from the field at 0-7 from three and score 8 points? It's probably not going to happen all that often. Trae Young's a really good player, and yes, they defended him well today. There was nothing revolutionary about how they guarded Trae Young today. On the flip side, Duncan Robinson shot it terribly all season for them to a point where he shot himself out of the starting lineup, and Max Strus is a starter now. It was 9-10 from the field and 8-9 from three and scored 27 points. How many playoff games is that happening in, Jody, where your Duncan Robinson to Trae Young scoring difference is 27-8? I bet that doesn't happen again the rest of this series. And that's kind of what you get when you get this outlier blowout game like this. Atlanta didn't have it from the jump. Miami looked rested. They looked good. But game two is going to start anew. And the thing I'll tell you about the Hawks that you just have to remember, this is a fearless young bunch. They went to a conference final last year. Being down in a series all of a sudden for these young guys is not terribly unfamiliar to them. And the one thing, and I'll tell you, Nate McMillan is certainly telling his guys this after the game. You step in for game two, doesn't matter what happened in game one. The scoreboard says 0-0 when the new game starts. And we're starting from scratch against this group. And again, I think this is the worst you'll see of the Hawks this series. It's maybe the best you'll see of the Heat. I still think the Heat win the series, but I don't think this is going to be a walkover series the way you saw today. A lot of things kind of happen that are outliers in that game. And I really believe that the Hawks will make these games tougher, more competitive, and closer.
I understand, and I kind of like the way you use the word outlier. Of the four games yesterday, which one was the biggest outlier?
That's a great question. I would probably tell you, you know, as much as I want to say Philly because how well Maxey played, when you got guys dropping like flies in Toronto, I don't know that that's going to end up being an outlier at all. And the other thing is that when you have Luka now who's going to miss game two also, I don't think you can make the Jazz win an outlier. And I hate saying this, because I love the way they played, and I actually think they could hang around in this series because of the way they played. But if you're going to ask me for an outlier, I guess I have to say it's Minnesota. I still think Memphis is going to win the series, but I did not believe that Minnesota could take this series deep, and rarely am I convinced in one game. I still think Memphis wins the series, but I think Minnesota's going to hang around in this thing. I knew Anthony Edwards was good, and I watched him a lot during the season. It was revealing to me and what a difficult time Dylan Brooks, who I consider one of the better perimeter defenders in the league, how much trouble he had with Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is so athletic. He did what he wanted on that floor when he wanted to do it and at big points in time in games. And this isn't something foreign to Anthony Edwards. He turned around in a playing game. He's the one that buried the Clippers with late shots in the playing game. He'll hit shots from the perimeter. He'll break you down and go to the basket. He's got the guts of a burglar, this kid, and he's as athletic as could be. And I look at what Minnesota did. I thought that Taylor Jenkins got outcoached by Chris Finch in a big way. That probably doesn't happen on the same level. But all of a sudden, Memphis is a team who kind of makes you match up to them, and they have to change what they're going to do personnel-wise now to be a little bit smaller so they can match up more effectively with Minnesota. Minnesota is getting Memphis early on in the series to have to make some significant personnel adjustments and changes, and that may mean Steven Adams on the bench because Adams could not handle Karl Anthony Towns at all, and Finch kept going to that well early. So I hate calling him an outlier, but because of the Toronto situation, Barnes out, Trent's going to be out. They're bubble in game two here, and then if Toronto goes down 2-0, it's going to be very hard for them to win this series. So I can't call Philly an outlier. And then with Utah, as long as Luka's not playing, Dallas just doesn't have enough firepower to be able to score with a decent playoff team. I don't know that Utah's a decent playoff team, but they changed their style of play and stopped shooting threes yesterday and played that slowdown style because it's what worked for them. Those two things can continue to work. So I guess I have to say Minnesota. It's just I'm not comfortable saying them because I love what I saw.
Leaning on outlier, what happened with Memphis this year? Not the fact that they ran second and were comfortably in second all year, trailing only Phoenix in a conference. The fact that they actually had a better record without their best player. Ja Morant out of the lineup, long stretches, not a problem. We'll just go out and win the game anyway. I know it doesn't make any sense to me, and I wouldn't ask you to completely explain it, but is there anything that contributes to something as weird a stat as that they're actually better without their best player?
Yes. First of all, the schedule, the way you look at the schedule and how it laid up, it was a very soft schedule without Morant. So let's start there. Here's the second thing, and I know you grew up in a baseball family, Jody, so you understand this concept I'm about to discuss, value of replacement player. You know what? Tyus Jones is a really good backup point guard. True. And yes, you're right, he's not John Morant, but you put a really capable player on the floor that plays differently than Morant and accentuates other guys, maybe a little more than Morant does. So, you know, Bane gets more looks and more touches in some different spots than he would normally. The same thing for Jaren Jackson. You know, Kyle Anderson tends to play a little more of a scoring role in Morant's absence. Guys pick up that usage, but Tyus Jones is good at setting those guys up that pick up that usage. He defends pretty well, too. He grinds on that end of the floor. And Jones is a good team player that complements these other guys. They were really good backup point guard, and they changed the way they do things a little bit and seem to adjust. I think one of the weird things about them right now is, you know, Morant played one game in the last 3 weeks of the season, and that was the second to last game of the season. Again, there was a blowout win for them, and he had 21-8 in the game. They seem to be struggling to adjust to having Morant back. And other guys may be used to getting shots in certain spots. The offense is getting stagnant. They relied an awful lot yesterday on Ja Morant breaking down off the dribble on his own to get to the free throw line. He was 16 to 20 from the free throw line. They're going to need to have more action and be more dynamic in their offense and use their weapons in a way more efficient way. Jaren Jackson was used terribly yesterday. I mean, for a guy as big and as athletic as he is, for them to have, you know, he takes 13 shots and five of them are threes and he goes 0-5 from three, you can't reduce a player of that size with that athleticism to just a simple three-point shooter. And that's kind of what Memphis is doing. So I think there's a definitely an adjustment going on right now to having Morant back. And I think other guys are trying to still figure that out a little bit. That's something that we, you know, don't talk about enough in the media. High usage guy leaves a lineup. When he comes back in, there's an adjustment for all those other guys that picked up that usage.
Agreed. And they need to get this next win because they go down 2-0. They can lose this series if Minnesota can go in and steal game number two. All right. Want to put the playoffs aside for a second because we talked quickly about the Sixers. You mentioned it. I mentioned it earlier just for those who don't know what you were talking about. Looks like Barnes, Trent, Thad Young, who's a small contributor off the bench, but a veteran guy who's been there and they get a little production out of him. All
and not, and by the way, Jody, not a deep team, Jody. So a guy like Young being out matters a ton.
Yeah, and with Barnes and Trent mean a lot out of the lineup. So they're coming in very undermanned for game number two, which is going to give the Sixers a big chance to go up 2-0. That being factored in, and oh, I don't know, his 20 other plus years as a coach in the NBA. What's your opinion on Doc Rivers for his entire coaching career, right up to today and what he does this year and everything else? But Doc Rivers, the coach's career, how do you describe it? How would you analyze it?
Listen, if I want to get a high seed and win over 50 games for my team in a regular season, you'll find very few coaches that'll do as good a job as that as Doc Rivers will. When it comes to the playoffs and analyzing matchups, and more than that, making moves in the fourth quarter, going maybe away from what you've done on a conventional basis to play in a hunch and play in a matchup, that's not Doc's strength. Just hasn't been historically. He runs a very good program. He gets the best out of players. Players improve on his watch. But when it comes to pulling playoff strings, that has always been a struggle for Doc. The one time Doc won an NBA championship, he had Tom Thibodeau sitting next to him. You know, he went to the finals 2 years later and lost in a game seven to the Lakers that year. He had Lawrence Frank sitting next to him. And don't get me wrong, he has a very good assistant sitting next to him in Philly right now in Dave Yeager. You know, so it's not like but my point being is that there's been too many 3-1 leads blown. And Doc going down with the ship and not making any kind of personnel changes or schematic adjustments. It's happened too many times for it to be a fluke, Jody. And I think that's important. With all that said, I'm watching this Philadelphia situation very closely because it would appear, and Doc said a bunch of the right things the other day where he talked about he didn't think Frank Vogel was treated fairly. He's not a candidate for the Laker job. Everything you would expect him to say right now as the coach of the Sixers to take any attention away from that. But doesn't it feel, I'm going to ask you a question, doesn't it feel a little bit like the Sixers have planted a fall guy for a championship run that hasn't failed yet?
I don't know that I would use the word planted, But I think Doc is going to be the fall guy. I don't think it's as organizationally, when you use the word planted, driven as that makes it sound. But I can tell you right now, because you know I'm a Philly guy, the fans already run him out of town. The fans don't like him because, and I have been really critical about Doc Rivers. I'm a bigger fan than you are. The way you just ran it down, I think there is something to be said for winning 50 every single year, winning playoff rounds.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, he's coughed up some 3-1 leads, more than anyone in the history of the game, and that's on the resume too. But I just think he's very deserved on that 15 best all coaches of all time vote that they had this year. Here's where I get off the Doc train. He has been a stone-cold jerk this year to the media. He is short. He is obnoxious. He is condescending. It started last year with his utter defense of Ben Simmons, that God forbid anybody ever question anything about Ben Simmons, who can't make a jump shot to save his life, and oh, by the way, quit on the team this year. But Doc defended him to no end last year, just never stopped, and he thought that was the best way to get the most that he could out of Simmons. Oops, wrong. And this year he's been just as bad. And I thought he was going to be a pleasure to have as a coach because he's a guy who's media savvy. Shoot, he was a member of the media, and he should know how to play the game. And for some reason, he has just been short-tempered this year and basically always seems to be looking for a fight, which I don't like. So, therefore, the town is completely turned on him. They want him out in the worst way. If they win, they'll still call for his head on a platter.
I'm going to tell you, and there's a reason for this. There's a reason that he's been like this.
Tell me. I'd like to know.
Well, because I think you have to look at a larger picture with the Sixers, the culture of blame that exists. Whatever you think about Ben Simmons, the basketball player, whatever you think about Ben Simmons, the man, he was kicked under the bus and was made to be the fall guy for that Atlanta loss. And
Hold on. You think somebody else was to blame? Please tell me who.
Well, I think teams win and teams lose. And I've heard Greg Popovich say many a time that the beauty of their culture is that we deflect credit and we accept blame. And if you want to tell me that Ben Simmons had a bad series, he didn't have a great series. Did he defend Trae Young pretty darn well a lot of the time? He did. There was good things and bad things. But I would have been much happier if Joel Embiid stood up in front of the media and instead talking about the guy that passed on a dunk, said something along the lines of, you know what, I turned the ball over 8 times, including one huge one at the end of the game, and this is on me. That's what the good cultures do. But that didn't happen there. And Doc turned around and answered a question in an honest moment.
Yep.
And he answered the question in the honest moment, and it turned on him in a very, very big way. So what happens when those things happen? Who does everybody blame? Jody, you know. Blame the media. It's the media's fault. That's the big bad boogeyman that we can all blame for when things go wrong and things are said wrong. Listen, you look at Media Day for the Sixers this year. Doc and Daryl Morey did their press availability together, and it almost gave me the feeling like Daryl was there for damage control. Like, it's so much of this right now, there's a distrust between the Sixers on a whole and the media, and Doc takes it out on a daily basis in terms of anger. I'm not saying it's right, but I am saying that there's something with the Sixer culture that I think is missing. I think there's a culture of blame there that shouldn't exist in the way that it does. And I don't know that a guy like James Harden, with his litany of playoff failures and the fact that he's been as discontented in certain places that he's been over the course of the last 2 years and pulled the axe he's pulled to get himself out of places, it's a little bit of a scary fit for me, Jody. I got to tell you, because you know there are foxhole moments where teams have problems and you have to come together to be able to pull yourself out of those things. And I don't have a ton of confidence in the Sixers from top to bottom and their ability to do that in spite of the vast amount of talent on this team.
Well, all I have to do is get 38 on a continual basis from Maxey, and they'll be just fine.
He was something else, wasn't he? He was fun to watch yesterday.
He is a foxhole guy. I'll go into the foxhole with him. Don't think he's going to get 38 again, but at least he gave him a big first game.
Agree with you.
He's a dynamite player and a dynamite kid, too. So if the Sixers need some better foxhole mentality, he might be the guy. The second-year guy. Not the superstar center. Not the NBA championship-winning coach. It might fall to the second-year player who's made unbelievable strides this year. Geltz, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks much. I'll let you get back to watching the Suns now. Enjoy. We'll get you up again during the playoffs. Thanks, buddy.
Look forward to it, Jordy. Take care, buddy.
Brian Geltzeiler. HoopsCritic.com. Check out his website. He hosts from time to time during the week, but always on the weekends on SiriusXM's NBA Radio. One of the best when it comes to analyzing the NBA. Always good when we get Geltz on.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.